Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. I am I'm so glad you're here, and I'm glad you're a part of our listenership. You know, I have received so many great messages and emails about how this podcast is bringing a lot of you guys hope, courage, strength. You know, many of you have even been using it in your men's small groups. I love that. And I've gotten messages from a number of you guys saying that you're actually using either my book, The Roar Within, or Into the Wilds, into your small group men's studies. I'm so glad you're doing that. I mean, growth is so important. It's how we learn. You know, we learn so many lessons from other people's lessons, and we can apply them to our life. So thank you. And if you haven't read them, go to Amazon. Like I said, you can find The Roar Within or Into the Wilds. Oh, let's see here. Wow, what a week. You know, we had the election last week. We didn't get much sleep. I'll bet many of you within your own families, you know, you're like sitting on pins and needles, you know, what's going to happen? And I just hope we can find some healing as a nation through all this stuff. I think the nation spoke loudly about some directions they would like to be able to see happen with our country. And I think much of that really includes our beliefs, our faith, and how we want to see this country come back to God. And I am so thankful for that. Now I just hope that you know, all the promises made will become promises kept, and we will be a stronger, more godly nation because of it. So anyhow, well, let's see here. I just returned home late last night. I was at hunting camp, so I'm a little bit late putting this out. And also, our studio has been under repair, so this is coming to you today with audio only. So if you're wondering, is there something wrong with the video? No, we're just doing it audio only. So I'll be back with video again starting next week. Well, I know for many of my listeners out there that you've probably been in the woods the last couple of weeks trying to take that, you know, that buck of a lifetime. And it's, you know, it's not just a hobby for some of us. I mean, it is our passion. And, you know, the thing that I love about being an older, if I can say that, more seasoned bow hunter now, is that I get to put all those years of lessons that I've learned into practice. And I know that there's still no guarantees. We all know that. But the more information that we can gain and we can use, the better chances that we have of being successful and really just about every single year. One of the things I love about hunting from a tree stand is that you get a different view than hunting on the ground. It's a perspective that's, it's only like been given to like tree dwellers, you know, and birds. You know, I remember as a kid, you know, in my dreams, I thought I could fly. I mean, that's I remember in my dream, I could like run downhill. This does aerodynamically makes no sense. But if I ran fast enough and I jumped on this sloped hill and curled up into like a cannonball position, somehow it would get me going. And then I could put my arms out and I could fly. And I loved imagining what it would be like to have that bird's eye perspective and just be able to watch, you know, everything below, like the way that a hawk, you know, he's soaring, or you even see turkey buzzards as they're looking for maybe a kill on the ground. But that's what hunting from a tree stand gives you. From the first moment when the beginning of that first light begins silhouetting the ridgetops and it begins creeping across the forest floor, you know, you get to witness the earth coming to life every single day. It's like the earth has been asleep and you get to watch it sit up, stretch. You know, it's almost like it's getting dressed for a new day. From the moment that you hear that raccoon headed back to his home, you know, in a tree, to maybe a flock of turkeys, you know, they're tree talking on the roost, just kind of going back and forth with each other. You know, that anticipation of what's going to happen maybe that day, it just begins to fill your mind and it begins to flood your thoughts. You know, will this be the day that I get to experience taking that buck of a lifetime? You know, maybe it'll be a nice doe to help fill my freezer. Or, you know, for some of us, maybe it's a day of frustrations. You know, maybe a group of dogs, you know, came running through the woods. You know, maybe someone's been out on a morning stroll and they've got their cell phone. They're having a conversation and you can hear him coming, you know, 200 yards away. Or maybe it's a guy riding through the woods, you know, on his four-wheeler. Well, maybe it's something that you do, you know, like accidentally clinking your bow on the metal steps as you host it up to your stand. I'll bet you've been there, done that. Maybe it's the squeaky rubber boots on the platform, or maybe dropping something like a hat or a glove or something as you finish dressing in your stand, you know, because you don't get fully dressed because you don't want to get all sweated on the way in. And when you get up there, you're trying to do this stuff, and it can be a little tricky. And then comes those moments, you know, when you hear that squirrel stirring in the leaves, or a turkey is scratching, you know, in the dirt, and your heart begins to race. You know, it could be the sound of a doe being chased by a buck. You know, you can hear that as he's kind of chasing or going through the bush. And, you know, it's that sound, and you're wondering, is it going to be close enough to pass by my stand? Is it going to give me an opportunity? I love that feeling of my heart about to beat out of my chest and getting to experience, you know, all those what-ifs that hunting has to offer. I absolutely love the hunt. I love the rush. And I love the experience you only get when you're out there, you know, not sitting at home, you know, dreaming about it. It's a sacrifice to get up before dawn. I mean, you know, most days, I don't even know that, you know, 4:30 comes twice in the same day, right? But when you make the sacrifice and you get up early and you have everything ready to go the night before, so all you have to do is kind of get that shower and put it on, and then you get to your stand quietly and undetected. But when you finally settled into your seat, you know, high off the ground, that last bit of sweat, you know, you had, it's kind of dried on your forehead now, and you pull your hat down close to your eyes, get your face mask over the rest of your face, you fasten on that release on your wrist, you knock an arrow, lay your bow across your lap, and you sit back. This is the moment that you have been dreaming of. This is what hunting is all about. This past week, I was heading into hunting camp, and you know, everything was going really well. It was leading up just without a hitch, no problems. And then last Monday morning, while I was preparing to do this podcast, it was the day before the presidential election, I'd hurt my back doing something stupid around the house. And I scratched my morning workout. You know, I said, yeah, like, I'm not going to do that. I'm getting ready for the hunt. Don't want to hurt my back anymore. And I came up to my office because I have a home office too. And I began to write the content for the podcast. And sometime within the first couple of minutes, you know, while I was typing away in my office on this thing, I suddenly felt this intense pain where I'd hurt my back like 30 minutes earlier. And it was so bad, it took my breath away. And it got so intense that I actually texted my wife. And she had been off work that day. She wasn't feeling good. I kind of felt bad trying to get her to come to me. But I asked her to come to my office. That is the last memory I have for about the following 30 or 40 minutes. And by the time I was coming out of whatever funk I was in, I was being taken to the ER by Stacy after she found me upstairs just staring out the window, she said. And she said I began to ask her the same questions over and over again. And at first, she thought I was joking around with her. But once she realized something wasn't right, which with me, that, you know, she knows there's nothing right all the time. But she told me to go ahead and get changed. And she said she was taking me to the hospital. And it's funny because I said, what kind of questions was I asking you? She said, well, you kept asking me over and over, why am I like sitting up against this ice pack? Well, it's because I'd hurt my back and I had gotten a bag of ice, but I had no memory of that. And then she said, the next question I asked after asking that one like 8 or 9 times was, do I have on clean underwear? And we kind of laughed. She's like, why would you ask me that? And I said, I think somehow I knew I was going to be going to the hospital. And when you go for stuff like this in the ER, you know, they're probably going to put a gown on you and whatever, and you want to make sure you have clean underwear. Whatever was going through my mind. But that was probably what I was thinking. But I have no memory of that. And when she got me to the hospital and we were checking in, that's about the time I can start remembering you know, anything, frankly, again. And I was in the ER for probably close to 4 hours with no conclusive evidence of what had happened. They came back with a possible diagnosis of me having a TIA, which, if you don't know what that is, it's a mini stroke. But they really weren't sure. My blood pressure had gone up. I think that's my nerves. That's what happens. That, what do they call that, white coat syndrome or something when you go to the hospital? But they said after I've been there for like 3 or 3.5 hours, they told me they wanted to admit me for at least several days of observation. And yeah, that wasn't flying real well with me, you know, but I told them I had two very important things that I had to get done. And you know, sitting and staring in the hospital didn't fill that list. So It was the day before the election. I wanted to get my podcast recorded, and I wanted to get it posted that night because I, you know, it's don't get very often that you can do a podcast the night before the election, and I just wanted to put some positive things out there. On Wednesday night, I was going to be speaking for, this was a Monday, I was going to be speaking for a fundraiser for our local Christian center, which is really important to me, and I didn't want to miss that. And the winner of The Voice from, I forget which season it was now, was it season 6? Josh Kaufman, friend of mine, he was going to be doing the music that night, and I was doing the speaking. And then, you know, that was on Wednesday night, and I knew Thursday morning early was when I was going to be leaving for Honeycamp. And, you know, I could have postponed the podcast, I'm sure. You know, they probably could have found another speaker to fill my shoes for the fundraiser, but I didn't want to do that last minute. But what's funny is, but hunting the rut, you know, I knew that was going to be another year if I missed it, and that wasn't going to happen. You know, that's how much I dream about experiencing those moments in the woods that only come around, you know, once a year if you're an avid deer hunter, at least if you're hunting just one state. And it's the only thing that still makes me feel like a little boy on Christmas morning. And I'm 64. And I hope that never stops as long as I can still hunt. Well, they ended up allowing me to go home later that afternoon, probably because I whined enough. And my wife was like, would you just get him out of here? But I couldn't remember anything in those 30 or 40 minutes, you know, that I kind of blacked out. I was conscious, but I have no memories. But, you know, they saw that I was having no side effects. My blood pressure went down just a little bit, probably because I was relaxing. But I think what did mess me up wasn't the fact that I had to go to the hospital for something like this. It was because I got on Google. And this is what my wife says, stay off. Okay, she calls me Dr. Google whenever something happens. She's like, stay off of there. Because they don't know all your symptoms. You're going to worst case, you know. And that's exactly what I had done. So I'm telling you, I hardly slept, you know, that night after I began to find all the possibilities of what it could be. You know, one of them said that I could be gone within 48 hours of a massive stroke, right? So needless to say, I probably should have stayed for a day or two in the hospital as they have a lot more experience than I do. You know, I'm trying to self-diagnose. But so within 2 days after that, what day was that? Was it Thursday morning? I think it was. I was meeting with a neurologist. And, you know, after looking at my blood work, and they ran me through a CT scan, and they asked me a lot of questions, you know, all the different tests they do. I couldn't even remember when Stacy told me she was asking me, and I can remember this part. She's like, babe, what month is it? What day is it? What did you do last night? I couldn't remember. And what's weird is the night before I actually shot a doe, and, you know, cleaned it out, took it to the processor, came home. And I thought that must be how I kind of irritated my back to begin with. But when she was asking me these questions, that just felt like a dream. Like, did I really do that? Couldn't have told you what month it was. Didn't have a clue what day it was. That's when I knew something was really up. So he looked at the CT scan. He looked at all my blood work. And he talked to me about my memories, what had come back, what hadn't come back. And I said, everything is pretty much back except for that little time when I kept repeating these obvious questions, maybe stuttering a lot like I'm doing now. And so he looked at everything and he said, all right, we're still going to probably do another scan on you, maybe in a few weeks or so. He said, but I just want to tell you something. This was not a TIA. This was not a mini stroke. He said, but what you have had is something called, and I never heard of this, called global transient amnesia. I had never heard of that, but he said, you know, not to worry. He said, this is way more common than people realize. He said, so go back to your business, you know, living your life, you're not dying. And I felt, I mean, I think in that moment, I felt my blood pressure go back down again. I'm like, oh, thank God, I get out of here. I get to go hunting. And, you know, that was like saying, you know, sick him to a dog, to a hunter. You know, I was ready to go. So as soon as I was out of the doctor's office, man, I was back home. I was getting all my laundry, you know, all my hunting stuff washed in my base layers and sport washed to get rid of all the different scent or fragrances or candles my wife might have been burning in the house, packing them in my rubber tubs, you know, shooting my bow one last time, making sure everything is ready to go, and packed up the truck, and it was go time. So the following morning, you know, I didn't sleep much. I was so excited. I was relieved about what had happened with the doctor, but I was just so pumped. So after dropping off our youngest at school by 8 o'clock, I went the back way, drove country roads, got to Doug's house, and he had his camper all loaded up, and I put my gear in there too, and we were off. And it's almost about a 2.5 hour drive where we hunt down in Vivi, Indiana, which is in the southeast corner, you know, right off the Ohio-Kentucky border. You know, but when you're talking hunting, you know, driving 2.5 hours, it's almost as good as being in the tree stand because we're telling stories, strategies. You're just excited. You're ready to go. So after we got the camper parked at the campground, which was only about maybe 10 minutes away from where we were going to be hunting, I got a buddy down there that has graciously allowed me to hunt. He's got, I think it's like 43 acres, which for two guys, that's enough property. And it's, there's no houses back there. It's all wooded and deep ravines and some ridges and some good bedding areas. And, you know, the anticipation was really high. But one of the things that had been causing us a little bit of worry leading up to this, you know, you move your cameras around trying to kind of catch them when they're going from their feeding areas earlier in the season to where they're getting ready to be bedding during the rut, and they're moving around. Late season food sources, whatever. We hadn't been seeing many good bucks on our trail cams on this, like, 43 acres of hunting. Now, I knew someone had purchased the land next door maybe 7 years ago or something, and they, you know, they ride four-wheelers over there quite a bit and stuff. I thought, well, maybe that'll just push them onto this property. No, but when you don't own the land, but you're given permission to hunt it, you're thankful. And you're just praying that the deer are there. You're just not seeing them yet, or you haven't figured out the new pattern since property, you know, changed and everything. So you're just kind of really trying to stay off the main paths because you know the deer are. I mean, where the four-wheelers are riding and where the guys are going for hikes or whatever they're doing. And I had a buck tag and I had a doe tag because I had taken one doe before, so I still had those two left. And I, you know, I kind of was convincing myself after seeing the trail cams for the last few weeks to not get my hopes too high. But, you know, how do you do that, right? Because you know it's hunting and anything can happen when you're in the woods. You know, even if you've just had a dog run by your stand, and I've had it happen, and I've shot deer minutes later. You know, this is called hunting for a reason. It's not called killing. You know, it's the possibilities of what can happen. So the first night, I was really silent, and it was really warm. There was hardly any wind blowing. I was dealing with mosquitoes. I mean, we're talking, this was like November the 8th. Like, what in the world? And so it was kind of, you know, crimping the deer movement just a little bit. The next day was Saturday. And, you know, we got up just a little before 5. And I ate a Mountain Ops protein bar. They're actually one of my new sponsors. And I'll tell you about that another time. But I absolutely fell in love with all these different protein bars they've got. When I want to go hunting in the morning, it's nice to not have to sit there and try to fix breakfast. They actually have this other drink. It's called Ignite, and they make it in a hot cocoa too. And it gives you like an incredible focus, and you don't get that rise and fall like caffeine will give you. And so I was more alert on my stand, you know, not dozing off and just really being able to focus. And this is, I mean, I'm being honest about that. So I kind of found a new thing I'm going to be doing now when I'm out hunting. I absolutely loved it. And I'll tell you more about that another time, but the company is called Mountain Ops, and they make, you know, protein powders, creatine, if you're a weightlifter, all kinds of different stuff. So I got all that stuff done. We get in the truck, you know, and we, it takes us about 10 minutes to get to, the woods we're going to be hunting, going up these windy back roads. I mean, really, I was hearing banjos, really just hoping I wasn't going to hear like voice that says, that's a mighty pretty mouth you got there, boy. But so we get there, we get everything in, you know, the walk down the steep hill to get to the first of 5 stands we've got set up in the back, you know, it takes a little time as you're trying to be, you know, as quiet as you can be. You're not trying to sweat too much. And so I've either got my outer jacket, my heavier jacket unzipped, you know, or I'm carrying it with me and just have my safety harness vest kind of exposed. You know, I'm one of those guys that, you know, I've got type 2 diabetes, it's genetic, and you know, I've got to pee before I get to my stand. I mean, I always do. Even if I had just gone back at the camp, I still got to go. So I always stop at this one spot in this really low part of a ravine where you're not being spotted, not being silhouetted, like upon a ridge or something. And I'll go in the stream and just kind of cover it up there. It's just a great way to be able to cover your scent. Not that deer really care that much about it, but not having to take the time up on a ridge to pause to do it. So once I get within, Oh, probably about 100 yards of my stand. It's like this predator mode kicks in. I mean, if you know what I mean. It's like, well, the spidey sense is tingling. There's something in the air. That kind of the old cartoon kind of a thing. But your senses, you know, your sight, your sound, your smells, everything begins to heighten. It's just like you're noticing things now. You're really locked in. You're really paying attention in that pre-dawn light to make sure that there isn't a deer somewhere that's close to your stand as you approach. One of the hunts, I won't go into this later, but I was approaching for an afternoon hunt, and as I'm walking down this four-wheeler path on the top of this ridge, I had a buck coming right at me down the trail. About 30 yards before he gets to me, he cuts in and walks right down to where my stand is. It's like the last thing you want to have happen, so I got to stand there and wait it out. But anyhow, you're really paying attention in that pre-dawn light to make sure there's not, you know, deer somewhere close to your stand as you're coming in. You know, and the worst thing that could happen to you at this point is to hear that, you know, that deer blow as you get near your stand. You're like, nuts. You know, when that happens, you know, your stomach sinks, you know, along with your hopes, because you know it could affect your hunt for at least, you know, probably at least the first hour or so. But this is the rut. So remembering, you know, that fact, you know, kind of lifts your thoughts back up, because you know anything can happen at any time. And as long as you're, you know, the guy in the woods and not the guy back at the camper sleeping in, you've got a better chance than he does of taking something. So, and then you get those final like 50 yards or even 30 yards to your stand are critical. You know, I'm testing every step to make sure I'm not crunching leaves, I'm not stepping on twigs. You know, I have a new product that I was sent. It's called Mountain Claws. I met a guy who developed these things a few years ago at the Harrisburg Outdoor Show, and he sent me these things, and they're amazing. It's like having memory foam pillows. You can kind of like stretch them over top of your boots and walk in with them, and it decreases the amount of sound you make. I mean, exponentially, it's amazing. But anyhow, those were called Mountain Claws, and so I finally get to my stand. And, you know, I quietly, you know, fasten my safety harness to the ascent rope, you know, and I've got my bow. I'm fastening it to my hoist rope, you know, and I've got that attached to the platform up high. So I can, once I'm up there, I can pull it up. You know, I lean my attached bow up against the tree. I don't want to lay it on the ground. You know, I don't want to have scent all over the place if I can possibly help it. So I kind of lean it up against the tree, climb up my ladder stick, you know, keeping the inside of my rubber boots away from the center of the ladder pole stick that's going up, because it'll squeak. You know, that in that wet morning when that dew is on there, you bump that rubber against that metal, it'll squeak with every single step. So you gotta like almost walk on the very outsides of these metal steps as you're going up. And, you know, once I get to the platform, you kind of do that final swing step around. And once you get up there, you know, you detach your safety harness, you know, get your tether reconnected to the tree, and then you quietly sit down and you put on your bow release. You know, then you can either hang your bow or knock it across, or I mean, put it across your lap. You know, get that arrow knocked. And then the next thing I do is I say a prayer. A prayer a buddy of mine has said on an elk hunt years ago. He'd say, God, just pray that you would bless our hunt today. And sometimes that includes an animal. And now it's game on. This is pretty much my ritual every time, but I've had to learn a lot to get to that point where I'm actually in position to not only find deer, you know, and to see them, but to not spook them. Because the whole game with whitetails, and they are amazing. You know, the only thing a whitetail can't smell is nothing. So playing the wind is probably the most important thing you can do. But not being seen, not being heard, not being smelled, that's the game. And it doesn't matter what deer you harvest. If you take a deer, especially with a primitive weapon where you got to have them close and you put those things where you weren't seen, heard, or smelled, and in that moment when you're nervous and you make the shot and you make a good hit, you've done it right. And there's a lot of guys that do have private land. They're able to put in great food plots and great bedding areas and keep the pressure off. And they're in states that are really, you can grow some really big bucks. And there's some place where it's like really tough to get some of the bigger bucks just by the way things are made up with traffic or things that are going through. But, you know, playing the wind, it really is the most important thing that you can do. You know, if they pick up your specific human scent, they're out of there. You know, they got close to 300 million scent receptors. Bloodhounds got like 220 million. We've got 5 million. They smell what we can't even imagine being able to smell. And, you know, and if you move too much on the stand, you know, or your stand's not high enough, or you don't have enough back cover. I see so many guys put stands up just like on a maple tree, and they're up there 12, 15, 16 feet, and they're going to be busted. And when they sit, they're leaning forward, so they don't look like they're a part of the tree. So you just got to be really careful where you put that stand, because it is so important to make sure, you know, obviously scent control is going to be number one, but sight is really important. I've talked about UV dyes and brighteners before in here, making sure you don't have those in your clothing, because in that first hour and last hour of daylight, a whitetail can pick you out and you look glowing blue to him in the way that he sees. They see in blue and they see in yellow. That's the two colors that they see in. And if you have a brightener in your clothing, you're glowing blue, especially, like I said, that first and last hour of daylight. But that's when deer are moving the most. You know, and if you clink your bow on the ladder, you know, stand as you're getting settled in, they're probably going to avoid that area. There's no metallic sounds out there. And a hunter's worst nightmare is when he's got a bad cough, right? Or a cold. You know, he's constantly sniffing when he's on stand. And you're trying to do everything you can to not give your position away. I remember a few years ago, I think it was Ted Nugent had like a was it the cough silencer or something like that, where you could cough into it. But it's miserable. But the thing is, when you've put it all together and you've done it right, you know, you've had enough sleep, so you're being able to stay focused and you're alert. It's almost like the UFC, right? You know, let's get ready to rumble. It's game on. And while I was sitting in my stand this week, you know, I was thinking about a book a dear friend of mine had written quite a few years ago. Steve Chapman wrote a book. It was called Look at Life from a Deer Stand. I love that book. You know, it was one of the first times I had ever heard, you know, someone who was a Christian man mix, you know, his faith with hunting. And that's a lot of what I do when I'm speaking for Wild Game Dinners, which I do all over the country in Canada, for men's conferences, I mean, just all kinds of stuff. I take adventure and I mix it together with my walk with God. And it's a way of not only, I've seen over 20,000 men come to Christ in the last about 12 years doing game dinners. It's just an effective way to reach guys. Would never darken the door of a church, because you get to build trust with them from whitetail knowledge, and then you get to build trust with them from the knowledge of knowing God, seeing God move, and how to be able to walk with Him. So, guys, let me just say that if you're looking to have a speaker for, you know, men's retreat, men's conference, game dinner, whatever, reach out to unleashed.men and just get a hold of me through there, and we can talk. I'd love to be able to come and you know, work with your guys there. So, but, you know, each morning, you know, as I'd watch and listen, you know, as the sun came up, I'd listen for the location of where, you know, turkeys were roosting, because I know I can use that information in the upcoming spring to locate all these new roosting areas. I'd listen to the squirrels, you know, where they're carrying on, as, you know, they're generally digging for nuts, acorns, and that's a whitetail's, you know, dinner table. I'd pay attention to how the wind was blowing, like on my cheek. And that way I could tell if, you know, if it's changing directions yet, or if it's swirling. You know, I have a hunt app, I think it's Hunt Stand, and I can see where my scent funnel is. I want to make sure that I'm hunting the right stand for the hours I'm going to be in that stand. When the wind is blowing the trees, you know, if you have a little stronger wind, I try to mimic the tree's movements, you know, if I need to get something out of my pocket or even scratching my face in the way that I might move my hand, almost looking like a leaf, you know, kind of vibrating back and forth a little bit, like they'll kind of like do that little, you know, flutter back and forth. You got to make sure you're doing everything that doesn't go contrary to what a deer would be used to seeing when you're in a tree or when a wind is blowing. This is a whitetail's bedroom, right? He knows how everything works together and what doesn't fit. It's like he knows how to find Waldo. So on the morning of the fourth day, you know, the rains had stopped, you know, overnight. It had been raining really hard the next morning, and things had gone quiet, and we knew bucks are going to be on the move. They're going to be freshening scrapes back up. You know, everything's been bedded down. They're going to be out moving. And my stand was just outside the edge of a bedding area leading down to a small ravine that leads to another bedding area. So this is where I'd hope to get a shot at a great buck, because he's cruising from bedding area to bedding area, which is really what you want to do during the rut. You're not hunting food sources. You know, between the cover and the bedding area, that's what you've got. That's where you're going to find the does, and that's where you're going to find the bucks. So, But I only knew of like two Pope and Young bucks that I had on camera, which, you know, if you've hunted long enough, you know, obviously any deer is respectable. But you kind of have goals, some of us. You know, you don't eat horns, and I totally get that. But if I've got, you know, does or whatever in the freezer, I'd like to hold out for something maybe as big or bigger than I've shot before. So I was kind of hoping, you know, like anything can happen. You know, maybe even though I wasn't getting good pictures, you know, bucks might be cruising from one property to another because there was no fences around. And, you know, maybe there'll be a hot doe somewhere near me, and they're picking that thing up. They can smell like 400 yards away. And that's exactly what happened. About probably 250 yards across a ravine and atop the next hill, there was a guy calling his dogs, which had obviously gotten away from him and gone down maybe up into the edge of the woods near his house. And, you know, I was kind of bummed. I was like, I was sure it was going to spoil, you know, that hunt when I was in there that morning. And I was so focused on his dogs, which were still too far away to really be a spoiler. I caught movement, because that was to my right. I caught movement out of my left eye, which is the direction I had come in from on my path that leads back to this stand. And there, smelling this estrus drag I had put out on my way in, was about a 150-inch 8-pointer, which is a really big 8-point, if you know what I'm talking about. boy, I just saw his horns, and he put his nose to the ground. I'd put a drag parallel to this four-wheeler trail that leads to the path where my stand is to try to get him to follow that scent trail and pass me at like 8 yards broadside. And it was really thick where I was, so I couldn't get much of a further shot. So that's why I was trying to lead him in at least that close. Otherwise, it was going to be, you know, all the way out there. It was like 32 yards or something. But he stood there out on this path at probably at about 40 yards when I first saw his horns, nose to the ground. And I realized that was one spot where I'd poured out quite a bit in one spot where I was actually starting to do my drag from. And he stood there smelling this spot with his head down for at least 7 or 8 minutes. I mean, he was probably getting all jacked up on estrus. You know, it's kind of like waiting for your pre-workout drink to sink in before you start lifting weights. But it threw me that he didn't turn and come towards me once he moved. He kind of paralleled me, and I was afraid he was going to keep walking by. But before he could turn to come toward me, which is the way I had actually set it up, and he probably would have done, he stood there at 32 yards broadside. And I didn't wait for him to come down and turn closer to me. And I was thinking, you know, if he keeps going fast, because I've had him do that. They get to the end of the estrus drag, don't realize it's turned one direction or the other, and they keep going forward trying to find the scent again. And I was thinking, man, this could happen fast. So I kind of rushed the shot. I didn't hold low because here I was at 32 yards, and the shot when I let go of the arrow, I saw his whole front end, you know, his legs drop down to the ground, and the arrow sailed right over his back. Well, lesson learned. You know, I know deer do that. I've had them do it to me before, but you know, 32 yards for an animal that can drop that fast is a little bit of a long shot. You know, for elk, it's nothing. These are whitetails, a little bit different. And, you know, when the adrenaline is pumping and all you can see are antlers, you know, it's funny the poor choices, you know, that even a seasoned hunter can make. You know, he was gone. And so I went to go see what happened. I gave it just a little bit. And I had heard a loud kind of like a thud or a whack. It was more of a whack sound. At first, I thought, well, maybe I hit him in the shoulder. But when I got over there, I saw the color to my fletching sticking out of this dead tree. I had buried that Grim Reaper broadhead so deep, you couldn't see the broadhead. I had to take the arrow and twist it, you know, counterclockwise just to get my arrow back out of the tree. That, I'll tell you what, those Grim Reapers are serious penetrators. You know, we did testing on those years ago in New Mexico? I can't remember where it was. They're just amazing penetrators. I've been shooting them almost every year since 2006. But anyhow, you know, things can happen fast like that. And when things are getting dark, now here's something I'll bet you guys can relate to. Sticks that you'd normally see in daylight begin to blend into the forest around them, right? You know, sometimes you even start seeing things that you think are a deer, and it's just the night shadows playing tricks on your mind. And I think it was the next to the final evening. Yeah, it was night before last. My buddy Doug, who was hunting only about 100 yards away from me this one night up across on the steep valley, I was I was about ready to take the air off my bow. It was getting that time when you're looking at your pins and you're trying to figure out, you know, if a deer came around underneath me, could I still pull off the shot? You know, but then you're thinking, okay, here's when shooting hours are done. There's a reason why they have shooting light being at this time. And I was taking the arrow off my bow, and I hear this deer blow, just whew, whew. And I thought, he must have shot one because it was behind me but towards him, and I thought he had to have popped one. And it's standing there, maybe there was two of them together, and it's blowing. But he had taken a shot, but what had happened, it was really high stand going down a ravine, so the deer was way low below him, and the shot was only like 22 yards away. But what he couldn't see were those little branches like that I was talking about and thorn bushes and everything that were kind of surrounding it that you begin to lose once it starts getting dark. And Doug's a champion archer. I mean, he's amazing. He's got DG Archery. So if you're ever looking for something to get down in central Indiana, around Anderson, Indiana, look up DG Archery. He's as good as they get. But I wasn't feeling as bad now. I mean, if he could miss like that and exactly what had happened, whether she ducked or whether it hit that brush, never know. But I didn't feel as bad about myself. So the last morning, which would have been yesterday, you know, Doug said, hey, listen, he goes, I'll stay at the camper. I'm going to get everything cleaned up, you know, and put away and checked out. He says, there's no reason for you to be here. I'll just drive you up to the property and drop you off before light. And I'll come back up maybe like 11 o'clock and come back down. And that way I'll come down and get you on my four-wheeler so you don't have to worry about walking back out again. So he drops me off for the last morning hunt. And on my way down to the stand, you know, and I was there plenty early, I had a deer blow out right in front of me twice. And I'm thinking, great. What a way to start your hunt, dummy. Did you ever do that? I'm like, really? But, you know, so I sat there, you know, after I got to my tree stand and these deer had blown, I'm thinking, well, I better start thinking about something else because I'm probably not going to see anything for a little while. So I sat there for like the first 90 minutes and I was honestly, I was thinking about this podcast because I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it on the day I normally do it. And I said, God, what can I talk about? I don't want to go back and talk about politics with the election. I want to move on. I want our country to find healing. I want our country to get whole and strong again. As I was thinking about this podcast, you know, I started thinking about things like, you know, I missed a giant buck. Well, that's kind of embarrassing, but I don't have any reason to hide it because I know how I felt when Doug had missed his, and he's an amazing archer. There's other guys out there that I've been seeing, man, I missed a buck of a lifetime. I'm like, hey, learn from it. Get back out there. I was thinking about how dogs have been running deer, you know, and I had this list of excuses that kind of went on and on why I hadn't taken anything, you know, after we'd been out there for 4 days. And I finally stopped complaining to God. You know, I settled into this feeling of thankfulness and gratitude, which my wife had been telling me, you need to be thankful you even get to get out there. And she was right. To even be able to get out and go hunting, to experience those feelings of my heart getting to race like that with a great buck. And even to think, you know, just a couple of days before this, I was laid up in the ER. And so I finally had accepted that this might be the only year that I only had one deer in the freezer. And it wasn't a big doe. I wanted to at least have another doe. I wanted a great buck. But I'd even said to God, you know what, even if I don't get an opportunity for another doe to give us a little more meat, I'm just thankful that you've allowed me to be out here and I've learned. You know, every year when I do score, when I do take something, it's because of lessons I've learned before. So, you know, all these years, these elusive creatures that I've been hunting, I was just thinking about everything that I had learned. You know, I'd heard the owner of the dogs again this same morning now, as I'm thinking about this, I heard him up at the top of the hill and I could hear him whistling and calling for his dogs and clapping his hands. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Well, you know what? I'm not going to be negative. I got to get out here. I get to hunt, you know, right? It's a good thing. And so as I'm watching over my right shoulder, like the same way I was looking before when that buck surprised me off to my left, I'm looking up there and I'm watching them. And I got to thinking, hey, remember the last time this happened? That buck came in and kind of like just caught you off guard. I'm thinking, well, that's not going to happen again. Son of a gun. I slowly turned my head and I began to look down the path that's coming to my stand 12 yards away and sneaking in as quietly as a church mouse. It's this really big maternal doe. And if you've hunted long enough, you know how hard maternal does are to fool. And unfortunately, my bow was laying across my lap and my release wasn't hooked onto the D-loop, you know, on the string. And the way she's coming in, I'm like, I gotta take my bow off my lap. I gotta rotate it into the upright position. I'm gonna have to, like, you know, twist my body, pivot left on my stand without making a noise. You know, everything's got to be right. And then I've got to hold my bow and I've got to be able to slowly raise it to get, because she's now almost underneath me. She's now up to 8 yards. And as I get my bow up into position, she looks right at me. And at first I couldn't figure out why. I'll tell you now what happened later. I took a picture of myself later, like a selfie, like where you hold the camera up, and I held it so she would have been off to my left, but the camera's at my right up in the air. And I was looking at my shadow in the tree on the ground because the sun had been coming up. Sure enough, you can see me silhouetted. I wasn't sitting up against the tree anymore. And you can see me raising my bow with the shadow. And that's exactly where she was looking. And so that's how she busted me, because the wind was perfect. It was going in my face away from her. And so, you know, here I am. I've pivoted. I've got my bow. I get into position. She sees my shadow. She looks up. She knows something isn't right. And so she starts doing that stomp, bobbing her head. She's trying to get me to move thing, you know, right? And she never winded me. But I held steady. And this is where I'm glad I lift weights all the time, because holding a bow in just my left hand without my D-loop being attached yet and having to hold it without moving and shaking, that was tough. But she still wasn't comfortable with what she was seeing. And so she turns her body before I can get my D-loop attached so I can draw. And she slowly begins to, like, do this little, you know, trotting away. So I raise my bow immediately, you know, I get things attached. I come to full draw and I'm following her movements. And I'm going, she's not going to give me a broadside. But there was one little sapling on my path that goes back out, and before it drops down off the four-wheeler trail to this incredibly steep and deep hillside. And she has to pivot right and expose that right shoulder to me as she goes to make her way out. And I was leading her. I was following her. And the second that she gave me that opportunity, I let that arrow fly. And, you know, it wouldn't have happened, because I was going to prune that tree earlier in the year, back in the summer, because I thought, and I want this being there in case I get a shot. It ended up being a lifesaver. You know, I'm glad I didn't take out all that brush, because in some ways, yes, it does give you cover as they're walking in. But in this instance, it made her have to stop and give me that broadside when she wanted to go back out. I had her at 22 yards and it gave me just enough to get that quartering away shot. And that Grim Reaper broadhead didn't hit a tree this time. I mean, and I shot it out of my bare bow, and it was like putting that combo together was like a finely oiled machine. I mean, it was silent. It was just this, and it blew right behind her ribs, because I had, you know, you're aiming for that opposite front leg from that angle. And it blew not only right through the side, went through all of her vitals, came out the other side, up front, buried into the ground about 3 inches deep. You know, when you've got enough bow weight, poundage, when you've got enough speed, when you've got enough kinetic energy, and you've got a really sharp, solid broadhead design, it's a done deal. You know, it sealed her fate. She went straight down over the hill on the other side, off the four-wheeler path, and way straight down. I mean, it's difficult to walk. And she was on the ground in a matter of seconds. And it's not the kind of pictures, you know, I went down and, you know, it was real easy finding her. It wasn't the kind of pictures you want to bring home and show to mom, right? I mean, there was so much blood. That's what a sharp broadhead does. You know, it's severing all those veins and arteries and everything, and it's causing incredible bleeding. But that's what you want to have happen. It's not pretty, but it's quick and humane. And so, you know, we get home, and my wife and I are at dinner last night at Roadhouse, and she asks me, because I'm telling her the story. And, you know, I dropped off, you know, my deer to the processor, and we were talking about the meat. And she goes, okay, so I know you grieve, you know, after making, you know, the kill. She goes, I know you do. She goes, but do you ever, like, get that male, like, that fist pump, you know, after, you know, felling a deer like that, when you made the shot, do you like want to go, yeah? And I just kind of smiled at her and I said, yeah. I said, I grieve the loss of life, and I'm thankful for the meat, but that fist pump type of excitement is what keeps bringing me back to the deer woods year after year. And I pray I never lose that. You know, so once the deer was, we got down there, and it was like a crime scene. It was really, the broadhead did his job. Let's just say that. You know, we took our time. We did a little scouting after we got the deer loaded up on the back of the four-wheeler, because I said, we won't be back till next year. And I said, I've learned a lot from this trip, seeing where deer are moving, seeing the fresh sign, everything. I said, let's just take a little extra time and let's do a little walking, you know, because we're not going to be back in here for the 2024 season. And I said, I want to apply everything that I've learned from watching how the deer move so that next year I can be on top of that giant buck instead of relying on a needlessly long shot. I found that tree. And how I found it was after looking for the arrow that when I had missed the shot. And I'm going to have a new stand in that place now, which is money. And I call it my money tree. So I am even more excited about hunting in 2025 than I was this year. My dad used to always say, don't wish your life away. But I'm telling you, I cannot wait until the next season gets here. And you got to love that. So what's the takeaway today? It's simply that challenges are gifts. You have to start looking for the silver lining in every cloud, in every storm, because it's there if you're teachable and you're willing to learn. We'll see you next time, guys. Take care.